I'm starting nine dickas.
I'm starting nine dickas.
All right. Sounds like we need to make a side bet.
Starts with a C, ends with an O, and in the middle is a cat.
I think his hair follicles cure malaria.
All right, gentlemen, the answer was da bear.
Coach Ditka's hair could single-handedly cure our dependence on foreign
oil. Bears, 31 to negative 7. Da bear. He's a merciful Ditka.
Da bear.
This is a family show, my friend. No cursing.
Yeah, that kind of language it belongs in the gutter, the speakeasy, and Coach Ditka's press conference. You know.
Hey, hey, everybody! This is Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, and this is your host Sean. And we got a big addition for you this week, and I'm going to apologize in advance. I said I was going to do one or two more positions breaking down the NFL draft, and guess what? Life got in the way. I didn't get a chance to look at any game film for the most part. I looked at a tiny bit, but really it wasn't worth presenting. So with the NFL draft coming Thursday and today being Monday and a hockey game tomorrow, I'm not going to get to any more of it. So we're going to miss out on quarterbacks, wide receivers, and the offensive line. For any of you people out there that are a little bummed out about that, you know, you can always send us a message, and we are going to go back and look at things because, you know, we have until training camp to really evaluate some players. And we'll go through and look at the film of all the players that the Bears draft. So, you know, there's still work to be done, but with the draft coming upon us, I didn't have enough time to really, you know, break down more players and look at them. So I apologize for that. And other big news for the podcast, not so much in the sports world, is I actually made a website for the page. There was a little bit of one through the old host, but we ran out of space there, and I wanted to try something else as far as hosting. So we are now on Twitter at twitter.com/SwerskySports. That's S-W-E-R-S-K-I Sports, S-P-O-R-T-S. And the new website is talkingsportschicago.blogspot.com. That's talkingsportschicago.blogspot.com. So check us out on both of those. We're going to be updating with, you know, Twitter feed and some articles and things like that. And also, if you are a subscriber to the podcast, which I hope you are, take note, is make sure that you have the updated RSS feed. So we changed that when we left the old web host. It should automatically propagate, but you know, sometime in the next week or so, resubscribe, unsubscribe, and then resubscribe to make sure that you have the newest RSS feed, because we're not going to be, after this episode, we're not going to be uploading to the new or the old server anymore because we ran out of space. I talk too much. Everybody talks too much. So that's, I guess, the note-keeping things about the show. So make sure to check us out on Twitter at Swirsky, twitter.com/SwirskySports, and on the site at talkingsportschicago.blogspot.com, and subscribe to the podcast. So NFL, really nothing new. Everyone's just gearing up for the NFL draft. And I guess the couple things I will note is the breaking news today was that I think 10 players failed the drug test. And that's so dumb. You know that they're going to do a drug test at the NFL Combine. Don't do drugs. And the only two I can think of offhand were the quarterback from LSU, who they considered a failed test because his urine was too dilute, which means that he was drinking a ton of water to try to dilute his urine to make it so it doesn't test positive, which they account as a positive result in itself, which is dumb. And then Timmy Jernigan, the defensive tackle from Florida State, tested positive, which is going to hurt his draft stock because he already has off-field questions and people question him, you know, not as his ability, but in his head. And this is just not going to help. I think that's going to cause him to slip a little bit. So I guess that's it for NFL. We'll talk more about the draft a little bit later in the show. But the biggest news, you know, right now is the Blackhawks. Is, you know, when we were talking about them previously, you know, they were down by two games to the St. Louis Blues. They were on 0-2. Came back, won four straight against the Blues. And it was just like, you know, they really turned it on. And not saying they played bad in those first two games, but they didn't play well enough to win. You know, the both games were in overtime, first one in triple overtime. And it was really worrisome that, you know, going on the road and losing in triple overtime, such a tight game, that the team's going to fall apart. But Coach Quenneville really has this team primed in playoff mode and ready to go. So there's a lot of veterans. These are guys that have won, you know, two Stanley Cups. So they know what it takes in the playoffs. And they really came back. And, you know, it's if you look at the numbers, they really didn't do too much different, but they played with more heads-up hockey and a little more aggressive. So if you look at the number of hits they had in the first game and the second game, it was 27 hits and 18 hits. And then going into games 3 and 4, they had 41 hits and 42 hits respectively. And then the last game, they had 43 hits. So they were really playing more physical, but they were playing smart physical. After the first two games, St. Louis had 13 power play attempts and 9 of them in the second game. I mean, granted, they only got one goal out of those 13 attempts, but you can't have the other team have a power play for, you know, 9 times. This is not smart. I mean, how exactly, you know, you can't go on the offensive during those 9 power plays, at least 18 minutes. So you lose the momentum because you're not on offense. You tire your guys out because it's tiresome trying to play shorthanded. And it's just not smart hockey. So they turned it around, and, you know, they were more physical, you know, more than doubling the number of hits that they had. And then they cut down the number of power plays from 9 to 4, which still isn't great, but it's much better. And then for game 4, only two power play attempts for St. Louis, and 2 in, you know, each of the last two games as well. So the last 3 games only had a combined 6 power play attempts, and they only had 1 goal in those 6. So they only had 2 the penalty kill from the power play was phenomenal against St. Louis, because St. Louis is really deadly in, you know, when they're on the power play. And in the end, the Blackhawks gave up actually 3 goals and 23 attempts. So that's holding them less than, you know, their season, what they are in the regular season. And then they were a lot more physical. So they really turned it up a notch against St. Louis and really dished out some of their own medicine to St. Louis as far as the number of hits and, you know, just putting a lot of shots on goal against Miller. And that's what really spurred on that comeback and to be able to come back and dominate in the last couple games and be able to win with 4 straight wins. And going on now to the Minnesota Wild, and I'm really happy that it was the Minnesota Wild and not the Colorado Avalanche. And not saying that Minnesota is a bad team. I mean, that's silly to say because they did make it to the second round of the playoffs. But Colorado has just, you know, they had such a good record this year. They played phenomenally, and they really had the Blackhawks number. So going into the playoffs, I was very concerned about Colorado. And so having them lose and then having a go game to 7 games where you have a tired Minnesota team, that bode well for the Blackhawks to go on to even further. And so, you know, they've kind of dominated a bit in these first two games, you know, other than a stretch of, you know, period two in game one and period three in game two. Looking at it, you know, they won 5-2 in the first game. And even though they had, you know, the power play wasn't really going, and they weren't winning faceoffs, they had a lot of shots on goal, and they were pretty physical, and they just, you know, played smart hockey. Game two, they even played better, giving up only one goal, so they won 4-1. They had two goals by Saad, and a really nice play with Bickle. He had that really nice stretch pass to a breakaway for Hossa, and Hossa had a good shot, but you know, Brizgalov just made a really good save on it, and then a hustle play by Taves, and it was a really smart play because I don't know if you really noticed, but if you look at the wide shot of that play from the backside, is I believe it was Koivu was going down. He was going to be the second person there, and Taves used his stick to slow down Koivu and kind of propel himself so he could be the second one down there, and so he could follow it up, and he actually made the goal. So that was just an amazing play on all three of the players' parts. You know, this heads-up play by Bickle, and to be able to do the stretch pass, and the smart play by Hossa to break away, and then just the hustle of Taves to be able to follow up on that. So that was really good. And then Bickle had a shot that I swore up and down went in until I saw the replay, and it didn't go in, but he followed it up with one that, you know, definitely went home. So, you know, they've just really picked it up in game two, and hopefully they can play like that for game three, because I think Minnesota, even with playing better at home, will be in trouble. But, you know, that's a big if, because Minnesota does play really well at home. So we'll find out tomorrow, but the keys to what I think that game are making sure that they pass well, stretch passes that, you know, hit the mark to spread that defense out a little bit, because if you play too short of passes, too grouped together, don't use your speed, that Minnesota is really gonna, you know, like, they've got a suffocating defense. So you need to be able to have those stretch passes to loosen up the defense and make them a little more honest. And they have to have some smart heads-up plays, because really the only way Minnesota is going to score on the Blackhawks is by, you know, either bad plays, not being heads-up, or making mistakes. And that's really how they're scoring. And so you just really need to cut those things out. Bickle needs to play well. Taves needs to play well. Hossa needs to keep playing well. I think those three playing well, and the defense playing like they are with Keith and Seabrook playing really well, I think that it's going to be difficult for Minnesota to, you know, to win two games in Minnesota. They'll probably split in there, and then come back home to Chicago for the win. But, you know, going into the playoffs, Bickle has just been, you know, on fire. He's playing so well. I mean, if you're looking at the stats for the NHL as a whole for the playoffs, you know, Bickle is right up there in the tops in number of goals. And if you look at players with points, is Kopitar from the Kings is tops in number of points at 13. But then Taves has 9, Seabrook has 9, Kaner has 8, Bickle has 8, Keith has 7, Saad has 7. So a lot of Blackhawks are putting up points. It's not even like one guy that's really taking charge. It's just a ton of guys. And I mean, Hossa's not even on that list, and he's just playing phenomenally. If you look at plus minus, is Kaner plus 8, Keith plus 7, Taves plus 6, Seabrook plus 6, Saad plus 6. And the highest guy in the playoffs is a plus 9. It's Paul Martin from Pittsburgh, who was playing very well, but they're not playing against the best talent so far. So the Hawks are just playing really well. And Hanzus is a guy who has probably, I believe he had the lowest plus minus. I think he was a minus four. I could check later, but I didn't write that one down. But Hanzus played phenomenally in the first series. And, you know, he's a little quiet in this second series, but he played phenomenally in the first series against St. Louis Blues. And I think he was a big part of the reason that they were able to win that series. And then looking at the goaltending, is Corey Crawford is playing lights out. In 8 games so far, he's given up 17 goals, which is a 1.87 goals against or goals per game average, and he has a 936 save percent. Him and Tuukka Rask are basically at the tops of the goalie play in the playoffs, and he's just playing really well. And I don't really know what else to say about it, but going back to my other point is Brian Bickle has stepped up his game. He only had 11 goals the whole regular season, but he's already got 5 in the playoffs so far. So you have Bickle that's just, you know, really picking up his play. And for a guy that got a big contract and he got his money, it was a little disappointing during the regular season to, you know, see him struggle a lot. But now he's picking it up, and he's picking it up by, you know, intensity. He's a guy who's, you know, very physical. He's getting a lot of hits. I think he led the Hawks in hits in the first series. And so that physical play and that, you know, big game mentality and the physicality and intensity that he's playing with and getting moved to the top line with Hossa and Taves, that's really sparking him, and it's all just clicking for him. And they've really needed that because it's been a little bit of a, they were a little flat in the first 2 games of the first series. And even though they kept it close, it was a little rough. So, you know, you sort of needed that boost. And, they they still have Sharp, who's just, you know, not getting the goals. And even though he's got some good shots, he's just not putting it in the net. And I think he's really going to have a breakout. Maybe not this series, but next series, I think he's just really going to break out, and he's going to be the one that's going to be the engine that drives the team. And hopefully that's the case. So let's see how it goes. And after the next episode, we'll probably have 2 more games under the belt. So we'll have the 2 games in Minnesota. Then we can break down those a little bit and see where we're at. Hopefully 2 more wins under our belt and, you know, a little bit of rest before the conference finals. But I really honestly think that they'll win 1 of 2 and then come back home and win it in game 6. And then we'll talk a little bit more about baseball and the end of the basketball season when we'll have a guest on a little bit later. We've got the importance of the Blackhawks out of the way, and that's the big story in Chicago right now. But the other big story is the NFL draft is coming up, and as much as I love hockey, and I love hockey, is NFL is king, and that's just the way it is. So we have the NFL draft that starts on Thursday, and I love the draft. And if you guys are new to the show, I used to go to the draft when I still lived on the East Coast. And hopefully they bring the NFL draft to Chicago in the next year or so, because I would love to go to it again. It's just such a great time. The NFL really does it up well. And it's a really cool event. And I'm glad that they broadcast it. And it's just, the draft is something that I geek out about, as you can probably tell by how much game film I watch. So I'm going to do my final mock draft. I've, you know, looked over a lot of players, and I've watched a lot of game film and read a lot of other people's analysis of players that either I didn't have time to watch film on or guys I didn't have film available, because there's some guys from smaller schools that there's just not a lot of footage out there for you unless, you know, you are an actual NFL scout. I'm not. I'm just a guy that loves watching this and has watched football for a long time. So As I've told you before, I do mock sites because, you know, it's kind of silly to, you know, go through and be like, oh, this guy, I'm going to take him in the second because he's a second round grade. But the honest truth of it is that sometimes guys go much higher than you anticipated, or that the quote unquote experts anticipated. And then you have guys that just, fall, like Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was at the NFL draft, and I think that might have been one of the last years I went. Is it was so embarrassing for the poor guy, as he was there and was the last guy there and wasn't getting drafted, and they finally brought him in the back room. So he's a guy that just really fell, that nobody expected him to fall that far. So, you know, I like using the mock draft sites because, as I've said before, is they take, you know, they have a big board of the players and rank them, and then the teams, they look at their team needs and kind of mesh them together. So, you know, sometimes they reach for a player, sometimes players fall. So you really have to, you know, there's a guy that, you know, you do 1 week, he's there in the round four, and then another draft, he goes in the late second. So it's, you know, part of the draft is not everybody, it's not going to go the way anybody thinks, you know, and whether it's Mel Kiper or Mike Mayock or even, you know, Phil Emery, who it's any of these guys, the draft never goes how they expect it. So that's why they have so many guys in there, and they have a war room, and they're, you know, their top players at each position, and then, you know, ranking within and where they think people go, and they'll do mock drafts amongst each other, you know. So I like doing this site because it's a little more realistic than just looking at a list by my own. With that said, is I did my final mock draft before the actual NFL draft. So this is the one I'm going in with. I have at number 14 pick, round one, Calvin Pryor, free safety out of Louisville. And normally I would, at the number 14 pick, I think you're going to get your best value with Aaron Donald. As good as I think Calvin Pryor is, I think Aaron Donald is a little bit of a better value pick. But in this particular case, he went number 12 to the New York Giants. So he was off the board when I tried to draft number 14 with the Bears. So I took my next best option, I think, with Calvin Pryor. And to be honest, I'm a guy who wants to go best player available. And Eric Ebron was already off the board. I might have taken him, you know, with the number 14 pick. And I know there's a lot of people that'd be really angry if the Bears went offense in round one. But for me, you just got to take the best player available unless you have the absolute best at that position. You know, if you're a team that has, you know, the Colts that have Andrew Luck, who's, you know, at the beginning of his career and has a long way to go, you're not going to draft the quarterback, you know, even if it's the best player available. But, you know, for the Bears, there's not too many of those positions. And Martellus Bennett is really good, and I like Martellus Bennett, but you get Eric Ebron, he's a different type of player. Anyways, he wasn't available either. So I went Calvin Pryor, free safety out of Louisville, the number 14 overall pick in the first round. Round two, the 19th pick in that round, I went defensive tackle out of Florida, Dominique Easley, who I really like. I think he's the second best defensive tackle in the draft behind Aaron Donald. And if his knees check out and he's in good health, he's a really explosive player, and he will be awesome for the Bears. Very excited about that. Third round, number 18 pick in that round. This was a value pick. I wasn't thinking this position, which was strong safety, but this is a guy that should have gone mid-second round, maybe late second round, like, you know, the later middle. Deion Buchanan, from the strong safety from Washington State. But he's there in the mid-third round. That's a good value pick. So you gotta take him. And if nothing else, between Buchanan and Pryor, you just really solidified your safety combo for a long time. Fourth round, number 17 pick, I went Nevin Lawson, the cornerback out of Utah State. And Nevin Lawson, he's a guy that's, you know, he's not that tall. He's 5'9", 190 pounds. He's a little bit smaller side, but he's a former track guy. He's a Jamaican. He's from Jamaica, so he's a track guy because that's huge over there. He's really fast, really athletic. He's got really good hip movement, backpedals really well. He's a really good cover cornerback. But where he lacks is being able to come up and do press coverage, being able to be physical with the receivers. He gets a little grabby sometimes with guys, which, you know, is going to get a flag in the NFL. And a little bit weak on the run support coming up. And the reason I went Nevin Lawson in the fourth round is, number one, you know, Charles Tillman, this is probably his last year, so you need another cornerback to come up. And I think Nevin Lawson could be pretty good. I think he's going to really benefit a lot from being able to play with a guy like Charles Tillman, who excels at being physical and, you know, not getting a lot of ticky-tack calls and coming up and supporting the run. I think he could really learn from a guy like that. And he is small, which is going to be, you know, after Tillman is gone, you're going to have, you know, two pretty small cornerbacks, you know, which is going to suck. But, you know, I think the way this draft had fallen, you know, you're not going to get too big of a cornerback that late in the draft. So I think Nevin Lawson is a pretty good value pick at that point. And then the fifth round, number 16 overall pick, you need a backup for Matt Forte. I got Andre Williams, the running back out of Boston College. And he's 5'11", 230 pounds. He's kind of a bruiser. He's got really good vision. He's, for a big guy, he's got that extra gear. So when he's able to break away, he's got that second gear, you know, to really take off. And, you know, you're not going to have too many guys that catch him from behind, you know, the faster cornerbacks, but any no defensive lineman's really going to catch up to him. But he doesn't have, you know, very good background in receiving, which is a little bit of a disappointment when you know, the way the Bears offense is. So that would be something he'd have to work on. And he's not that nifty of a runner, but the thing is you're already getting a running back in the fifth round, and he's a little bit of a change of pace back from Matt Forte. So I think he would actually fit in fairly well. He was really productive at Boston College, so I think he could be a guy that the Bears could really utilize. And at the fifth round, if he doesn't do well, you're not losing too much. You could always pick up another free agent rookie running back and, you know, see what you have. The sixth round, the first pick in the sixth round, which is the number seven overall, The sixth round, the number seven overall pick, it's the first of our two picks in the sixth round. I went Kevin Norwood, the wide receiver out of Alabama. And he's 6'2", 200 pounds, so he's a little on the light side, but he's fairly tall. He's got really good hands, runs really good routes. He's not all that fast, and he needs to work on his blocking a little bit. And I think he's a guy that's, you know, could be an Earl Bennett type, where he's very reliable, good third down receiver, not going to blow anybody's doors off, but he's going to be able to, you know, be very reliable. You're not going to get any dropsies from him. And he's a smart player and went to Alabama, so you know he played at a quality program. I think, you know, in the sixth round, he's actually a legitimate guy to win that third wide receiver position. I think it could be something that the Bears need. Much more sure-handed than Jeffrey and Marshall, who are phenomenal, but they get a little touch of the dropsy sometimes. And then with our last overall pick, which is the number 15 pick in the sixth round, I went Kevin Pierre-Lewis, the outside linebacker out of Boston College. He's 6', 230 pounds, and he's a really strong guy, really fast. You know, he needs to be a little bit better with his instincts, and he's a bit of a tweener. So, you know, he's not big enough to be a defensive lineman, and I think he might be, you know, not quite a linebacker per se. So I think he's really fast, like I said. I think he would fit in with a fast defense. So I kind of liken him to a John Bostic, where they play really fast and, you know, they're going to have to develop. I think in the sixth round you get a guy like him. He's definitely could be a very good special teams player and develop into a decent backup, maybe even a starter someday. I think he's definitely a value pick in the sixth round. And because that was just picking straight, you know, with the Bears picks that they were assigned. And I went through and I know that the NFL draft never goes through without a lot of trades. So I went through and with the mock simulator, you know, you can offer up trades. So I did one trade and I did another mock where just to see, you know, with a fairly good trade on our part, you know, where you could go. And so what I did was with our number four, I traded the number 14 overall pick to the Miami Dolphins for their number 19 pick in the first round and the number 17 pick in the third round. So we actually came out pretty ahead on that if you look at the Harvard trade scale, which is what a lot of teams are using now. And we ended up, you know, coming away pretty well on that trade. Not a total robbery, but definitely as far as the point value, we came out ahead. And I figure trading back a little bit in the first round, we could still get a guy that we really liked and pick up another third-round pick, which I think there's a ton of value. I mean, I would love to have gotten a second-round pick, but, you know, I don't think that's really too viable unless you trade it out of the first round and trade for 2 second-rounders or something. So with that trade, we have the number 19 overall pick in the first round. I still got Calvin Pryor, free safety out of Louisville. Aaron Donald had already been drafted. I felt Calvin Pryor was a good pick at 14. He's an even better pick at 19. Second round, I took Dominique Easley again in the second round. I still like him, you know, at that point. They're still good defensive tackles, but the caliber of guys starts to fall. In the second round, getting a guy like Dominique Easley is just a really good value pick, I think. And then with the 17th pick in the third round is the one we got from the Miami Dolphins. I really felt I lucked out by being able to get Carlos Hyde, the running back out of Ohio State. I've said it before. I think he's the best running back in this draft. And to get the best running back in the draft in the middle of the third round, that's just a steal. And he's a guy that could start for this team, I think. He's a bruiser. I mean, he averaged, I believe, over 7 yards a carry at Ohio State. That's playing in the Big Ten. Granted, it's not the SEC, but it's still a very good conference with a lot of good defenses, and he just ran all over everybody, and he's fast, and he's strong, he can catch the ball, he can play lead block. You could put him in the backfield at the same time as Matt Forte, and he's just a beast. So getting him in the mid-third round is just, I would, you know, be jumping around, you know, kicking my heels together if I was the general manager of the Bears and was able to get Carlos Hyde and he's number 17 in the third round. And then we will go to the 18th pick in the third round, this very next pick. So it's always nice when you have two picks in a row because you just look at two guys that, you know, in that round and you're like, I can get both of those. You don't have to do any kind of worrying that, you know, your guy's going to get picked if, you know, if somebody else goes. So I saw, again, the cornerback I really like is Luchesse Purifoy from Florida, and I think he's very Charles Tillman-ish, and I think he'd be a really good guy that can learn and be able to step in next year. Sorry, I'm sniffling a little bit. I'm getting over a cold. That was part of the reason I didn't get to watch a lot of the film is I was sleeping a lot and not feeling well. So excuse me and my voice and the sniffling. I'm still recovering. So quick summary is, yeah, first round, Calvin Pryor. Second round, Dominique Easley. Third round, Carlos Hyde and Luchesse Purifoy. I'm loving this draft. Fourth round, I saw a guy that probably don't need per se after our first round pick, but I absolutely love this guy. Is Craig Loston, strong safety out of LSU. And he's just a big bruiser. He reminds me of a lot of maybe like some sort of hybrid between Bob Sanders and Mike Brown, who used to play for the Bears. I think Craig Loston is the real deal. I really like him a lot, and he's, you know, in my top five safeties of this draft, and seeing him in the middle of the fourth round, the only thing that could have made me happier is being able to get Jimmy Ward, who I love. But being able to get Craig Loston, that really is going to solidify your safety tandem for a long, long time, I think. And, you know, they're going to punish receivers with, you know, just good hits. Fifth round, the number 16 pick, I went Brandon Coleman, the wide receiver out of Rutgers. 6'6", 225 pounds. He's a guy who's just big, and, you know, he's got good hands. But he's going to be a project. He's not that fast. He's going to be somebody that you have to develop to be a good possession receiver. And I think best case scenario, he could be an Alshon Jeffrey type. Worst case scenario, you know, he was fifth round. But I think Brandon Coleman could develop into a decent number three. And with the, you know, Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey, ideally you would like to get a guy who's just a burner. But I felt that Brandon Coleman has a lot more upside, and late in the draft is, you know, is anybody you get going to be a lock? Absolutely not. But I feel like Brandon Coleman is a guy that's you're less likely to miss on. And I figure with how few draft picks the Bears have, you really have to hit on them, these guys. So I figured you'd be a little safer than sorry. Number seven pick in the sixth round, I went Kevin Pierre-Lewis again, who I picked in the other draft. We already talked about him a little bit. And then the number 15 pick of the sixth round, I went Avery Williamson, the inside linebacker from Kentucky. And he's another project guy. I don't expect him. I mean, he's a smart guy. He's a leader. He's a really good tackler, but he's not that athletic, a little bit slow. He's a guy who, you know, could be a decent backup, a decent special teamer. I just thought he was a good character guy, good leader, and smart guy. I figured that would be good in the locker room, that type of presence. So with one trade, you still get, you know, the first two round of guys that you want, and then you're able to add in the third round, you know, Carlos Hyde, Luchez Parafoy, and fourth round Craig Loston. And you really, just by making that one trade, you were able to really smash this draft, I think. I liked the other draft without any trades, but, you know, adding this one trade really just boosted it by adding, you know, another pick in the third round. And this is such a deep draft. I think in the third round, you're still getting quality players that could start. I mean, if Matt Forte, God forbid, gets an injury, Carlos Hyde could step in and be the starter and do really well, because he's a phenomenal running back. And I hate Ohio State. I'm a Michigan fan. So being able to say that I really like Carlos Hyde and I like I like Ryan Shazier. And so it's, you know, there's some good quality guys at all coming out of Ohio State. And, you know, I think, you know, Carlos Hyde is right there at the top running back in this draft. So I'm really excited, you know, to be able to get him in the third round. So those are my mocks going into the NFL draft. And I promise that I am going to do an NFL draft special. And I kind of wanted to do something live during the first round, but I think, you know, then we're going to end up having, you know, a couple of short shows. So what I'm going to do is Sunday, I'm going to do a big coverage of the draft. I'm going to try to get some other NFL fans, you know, talking about the draft a little bit and, you know, who they think did what. And I'll break down film of all the players that the Bears drafted and really talk about them. And so I think we'll have a really good show next time. And fingers crossed, I'm trying to get Calvin Pryor and Jimmy Ward to come on the next episode. I don't know if that's going to happen, but there's potential. So keep your fingers crossed, because I think they're just really fantastic football players and would love to get a chance to chat with them. So, you know, we've got a special guest now, Gary, coming on to talk a little bit more about baseball and the end of basketball season. So this is going to end our football talk and, you know, the Blackhawks talk.
Welcome to Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. We got our baseball and basketball insider, Gary.
Hey, Sean.
So I guess talk a little bit about this terrible Cubs-White Sox game that we have going on.
Well, it actually wasn't that bad. It was a good pitching duel, except I thought the Cubs left some margin a little too long, but... I think it's only terrible just because of the fans' outlook on the season. You know, if both teams were actually decent, it actually would have been a pretty fun game to watch. The White Sox had some opportunities to score and they didn't. The Cubs, you know, got a hit from their pitcher and managed to score. So
that's how we do it.
Well, Smarja is earning that future contract, and the Cubs are hoping that they can get a lot for him when they trade him. So,
I mean, I think that's pretty much what's going to happen. I mean, he's not going to be a Cub.
Well, otherwise, why would you have him throw 135 pitches in was it May 5th?
Because you don't care if his arm falls off after trade deadline.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, I think it's unfortunate that this game isn't as exciting as it should be, but, you know, there's hope for both teams. So,
I mean, there's combined 6 hits in this game.
Yeah. I mean, the quote unquote aces are the steps until Chris Sale comes back. We're pitching today, so you know that's what you would expect. You guys can't hit Belisario, and you know, nothing. I mean, sorry about that. Everyone else has hit him this year, so
I'm, you know, I want to congratulate you on Jose Abreu, second player ever to get Rookie of the Month and Player of the Month in the same month.
I don't know why he congratulate me, but it's fun to watch.
That's your boy.
Yeah, I mean, these Cuban players, they can hit. There are some things that at least I'm concerned about. For instance, his on-base percentage is not that good. He swings in a lot of low pitches. He's a little too aggressive, but that's unexpected it is expected with these Cuban players. But yeah, no, he can play. He's living up to his, you know, the billing. So it's exciting to watch.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's not hitting for average. I mean, he's barely over 250, but, you know, he's just crushing the ball. 12 home runs already.
Gotta love that slugging percentage, leads the AL. So, yeah, and I think Dunn is benefiting a lot from him too, and that's something that I don't know if people are overlooking or not, but you know, Dunn's is off to his best start as a White Sox easily, and I mean he's looking like the player they thought they were signing 4 years ago. His average is in the 270s. His base percentage is over 400. I mean,
wait, yeah. Wait. I just want to point out that he has 20 walks.
Yeah, he's I think he's benefiting a lot from Jose Abreu, and it's a shame. If he has a good season, he'll probably earn a contract somewhere else. Because at this point, the White Sox really just want to get his contract off the books. But who knows? Maybe they can work out a trade at the deadline and get some prospects for him if he's doing really well. But it's nice to see him do well finally.
So what's the latest with Chris Sale?
Well, you're starting to get worried as a fan because you're not hearing anything. Last time the White Sox are notorious for not letting people know what's going on. And the last time you heard nothing, you know, John Dakes went down with a sore shoulder. Next thing you knew, he was out for a season. So it's not great, but that news hasn't come out yet. So I guess keep your fingers crossed.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I know a lot of people were upset that his last outing before the injury, he threw close to 130 pitches. And you don't want to do that, especially with a live arm like him in April. But hopefully, you know, still hopefully it's not something major.
So, you know, the White Sox are playing pretty well. And I mean, in that division, it's wide open because I think we both expected the Tigers to run away with it.
I think they kind of have been of late. I think they have about a 5-game lead over the second place team, 4.5. And they're on, I think, a 6-game winning streak. But it's still early. It's to say running away at this point is, you know, it's still a little early for that. I think what we're starting to see is there are at best average teams besides Detroit. But I think it's really a one team race in that division. I would expect Detroit to easily win it. I do like what Minnesota's doing. They're battling. They're surprising some people. People forget that last year Minnesota had an atrocious pitching staff, and what they did this past offseason is they went out and they signed a couple of, you know, number three type pitchers that, you know, consistently throw 200 innings. And I think that helped them. I think their record showing that they have more consistency and, you know, they're a better team because of that. But I think all four teams besides Detroit are so far behind Detroit in all aspects, hitting, pitching, overall, just over our team. They're ways away. So it may not look like Detroit is running away, but I think they're beginning. I think you'll see them win this division easily. I'd be surprised otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but it's still, even without Sale, and you're still hanging in there and battling around 500. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of it's because of hitting. I think you've seen the White Sox dip below 500 because their hitting has kind of hit a slump. But
you knew that was going to happen. I mean, they couldn't keep batting like they were batting for a whole season.
Come on, Tyler Flowers at 370. I expected that.
Yeah, that was not going to happen.
He's still up there. He's still around 340, amazingly. But you see Vicieto's coming back down to earth, and Ramirez is starting to come back down to earth a little. So, I mean, it is what it is. They're still fun to watch. It's still a more exciting team this year already than they were all of last year. So, and there's a lot of positives. I've been reading these articles about, you know, since the White Sox are playing the Cubs, they're comparing which team has a better future and all that. And I think there was an ESPN article on that. And a lot of people are saying that immediate White Sox, long-term Cubs, but, you know, they're saying the same things that I've said in the past, and that the Cubs can load up as many prospects as they can. It doesn't equate to winning it at the major league level. So, you know, we'll see. I think at this point, it just, you know, kind of sitting back and enjoying the progression. And then if Sale's injured for the year, this is the right year for him to be injured, because it's not like there's any plans for them to go anywhere. It's really a developing year or a developmental year.
I mean, looking at the Cubs, for a team that only has 11 wins, 11 and 18, I'm not that disappointed in him. I mean, you know, you look at where you want that team to be if you're a Cubs fan, and the guys that you want to be doing well are doing well.
Yeah.
Castro and Rizzo are hitting, and you've got, you know, Samardzija pitching well is what you need him to do in order to get the best package for him. So you have, you know, Hamill's pitching well, Samardzija's pitching well, and Arrieta's coming back and pitch well. So you've got some trade bait there, and then the, you know, Castillo's playing very well, and Castro and Rizzo, who are, you know, supposedly those three are going to be your long-term answers. So as a whole, part of the reason why, you know, the Cubs got a new manager is because the guys that they needed to hit weren't hitting, and they're coming back now and playing well. I mean, it's sure it's still early, but they're looking good while they're at bat.
Sure, and I think so too. But the thing I think the reason why I can't perceive Cub fans getting too excited right now is because they've seen this before. They've seen where these guys went like a month, 2 months, and, you know, hit well, and then just would go silent the next 4 months. And particularly Castro, just when he's in a slump, it's, you know, it's not a 2 week slump. It's a, you know, 2 month slump. So I think, you know, it's good. It's good that they're doing well, and hopefully they've turned a page and they continue to do well. But I think the jury will be out until they do it consistently for the entire year.
I mean, the thing that's, you know, still bugs me is that the platooning of players is Junior Lake has a really good game, so they reward him by sitting him the next day.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't play Junior Lake every single day and see what they have with him, because he shows signs of being an everyday player. And I was listening to some people on ESPN talk about him too, and it's like, just give him a chance. It's not like the team is going to make the playoffs this year, and they have to see what they have with him because of all their prospects that, you know, will eventually get up to the big. So
I mean, I sort of see it. I mean, you have to, guys that you're gonna move, you sort of got to keep them playing so other teams can see what they have, namely Schaerholtz. So, you know, but you want to get Lake in there, you want to get Kalish in there. So it's,
the problem is you're not going to get much for Schaerholtz. You could have last year, but you're not going to this year, and because he's not doing well, and you know what you're getting with him. If I were the Cubs, I'd just go young and go with people that they really should just cut ties with people that they don't see are in their future, like Schaerholtz or Barney, and go from there. I mean, what's the point at even Valbuena at third? You know, what's the point of putting them out there every day when your initiative is not to win games but to develop?
Yeah, and the nice thing is too is, you know, if you can move Barney late towards the trade deadline, you have Alcantara, who's second baseman, who's playing really well right now. I mean, he's batting .280.
Unfortunately, what, Barney's hitting .120? It's going to be hard to move him.
Yeah, but I mean, somebody's going to want him, even if you don't get anything for him. You know, it's you're getting rid of these guys that, like you said, that aren't going to be with the team long term. And Alcantara is the future, you know, of this team. And he's playing really well, .280 batting average, a .790 OPS, you know, 8 stolen bases. He's playing well. And then you have, you know, Chris Bryant, who's, you know, tearing the cover off the ball and down in Tennessee. You know,
yeah, but you don't want to bring him up too fast.
No, yeah, definitely not. But it's nice to see him just, you know, he's you know, he'll be moved up probably to AAA, I'm guessing, by the end of the year. He's just tearing the cover off the ball. But Baez is struggling, and I think this is sort of the Cubs brass saying, hey, we told you so. You know, he was doing well in spring training, but he's really struggling. And I think that's the whole thing, is they wanted him – they knew he was going to struggle eventually, and they wanted him to be struggling in the minors where he could work through it. I mean, the guy's only batting 149.
Sure. I mean, the other kind of perspective is him being sent down might have been a real letdown for him. And as a young guy, he's just not able to just get his mind cleared, and he's trying to press too much now because of it.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, this is baseball. It's a sport where if you get 3 hits out of 10 at-bats, you're an all-star. So, you know, it's a game where you fail a lot more than you succeed. So a huge portion of it is the mental aspect, because you need to be able to cope with going through slumps.
Yeah, and I still don't think it's good that he's going through a slump, but
No, it's not. But I mean, there's never been a player in the history of baseball that didn't go through a slump. You know, it's just how you recover from it.
Yeah, I guess the Adam Dunns of the world give you hope, huh?
I mean, you know, even look at the Mr. Derek Jeter, who's just, you know, batting poop this year.
I don't think he's concerned too much. I think he's like on his retirement.
He's just going to retire and have, you know, 8,000 hot girlfriends.
It's in the end, it's going to be a tough season for both us as fans, and we just have to enjoy, you know, what, you know, the bright spots, and you know, hopefully prospects pan out, and hopefully in a couple of years both teams are competing again, because I'm a little sick of like the winter sports kind of taking all the attention, and they rightfully should, but at the same time, it's like there was a long period of time when baseball was the number one sport in Chicago, or number two next to football, of course.
I mean, you know, kind of brings me to a point I wanted to talk to you about, is with the five teams in the four major sports in Chicago, it's where do you think they rank as far as importance to the fans, you know, with regardless of, you know, their potential to win, or, you know, their future prospects, but where they rank in, you know, the fans' love for them at the current moment.
Well, I mean, you're clearly seeing it where neither baseball team is getting close to selling out, but, you know, the other three major sports are selling out every single home game.
I mean, I think for me, it's pretty clear that the Bears, it's always been a NFL town, and the Bears are still number one.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's always in the last 40 years it has, you know, back in the, or 50 years, if you want to go back into the like 40s and 50s, I would have said it was a baseball town, but
okay. In my lifetime.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's definitely, it's a Bears town. The Bears are one of the top marketing NFL teams. That's the reason why the Bears play so many Sunday night or Monday night games. They have a really strong fandom. They, you know, it's their town and they own it. And I think all the other major sports know that. But the difference is, especially in the last 10 years, what at least I've seen living here, is there's been really a push towards, you know, basketball and hockey being kind of like 2 and 3. Whereas even when the Bulls were winning championships, there was still a strong, I mean, Cubs were selling over 3 million a seat, having drawing over 3 million people a season, and they were rolling. And it seems like baseball's kind of like the forgotten sport now.
I mean, it's pretty clear. I mean, you know, even in the past 6 years, the landscape as far as the fan appreciation has dramatically changed, because, you know, you could have said that, you know, 6-7 years ago, Blackhawks were, you know, looking up from the cellar, and they now
they were the worst franchise in all sports. Less than 10 years ago, they were rated as the worst franchise in all of sports.
And now, I mean, they're selling out like crazy, and they've won 2 of the last 4 Stanley Cups. And I think I would say that they're probably number 2 right now. I'm even ahead of the Bulls. I mean,
yeah, that's so I would, I think there are more Bulls fans, and that's the only reason why I would argue with that. But I think as far as excitement, I would agree. But
oh yeah, I mean, if you look at sheer numbers, I mean, it's a very big basketball town, and people love basketball. But I would say, as far as, you know, the passion and people, you know, going to games and watching on television, I would say the Blackhawks have moved to number 2, and it's probably, you know,
I mean, you forget
what's going to happen in the next couple months is probably going to change that. You know, if Derrick Rose plays during,
well, if they get mellow, you know,
if they get mellow, or, you know, if the Blackhawks win another championship, I'm sure they're going to ride high on that. But if they fizzle out before they get to the Stanley Cup finals, that could affect it. Derrick Rose plays well, you know, internationally during the off season, and they get Carmelo, that's going to boost them up. I mean, sure. I would say that they're neck and neck with the Blackhawks, a little ahead right now, but
you forget that if you look at all of basketball, if you look at the average attendance, the Bulls not only led every other team in average attendance, they led by a couple thousand people. And that's a pretty significant stat for a team that was missing their best player, you know? So there's definitely, I think the reason why it feels like, and I'm not trying to play devil's advocate, because I agree with you, but I think the reason why it feels more like the Blackhawks are the number 2 team right now is because they're doing well in the playoffs. I think during the regular season, it was definitely a different story. But then the Blackhawks are built to go far in the playoffs, whereas the Bulls obviously weren't.
I mean, you know, the playoff TV numbers, the Blackhawks did better in Chicago market. And if you look at the average attendance per game, the Blackhawks drew over 1,000 more people per game than the Bulls. And they were both number 1 in their respective sports. So the Blackhawks were number 1 in hockey, and Bulls were number 1 in basketball. The Blackhawks still drew better. I mean, they both drew very, very well, both over 20,000.
They also charged more, too.
It's true.
No, I mean, they're both doing very well right now. I guess going back to the initial conversation of whether one is 2 or 3, they're close, but they're both ahead of our baseball teams. And it's not even like slightly ahead. They're far ahead.
Oh, and you know, and as a White Sox fan, I'm sure you can be honest enough to say that if you look at just baseball fans, that there's definitely more Cubs fans than White Sox fans.
Yeah.
Look at, you know, attendance and TV numbers.
And it's not just that. Like, I mean, not that I'm complaining about this, but the White Sox dropped their season ticket costs. If you knew how much I was paying for my season tickets, I pay more for an 11-game package for the Bulls than I do for a 27-game package for the White Sox.
And you know, it's not a knock on the White Sox. It's just, no, you know, that's just, and this is the, you know, probably the first time that I can honestly say that the White Sox may have, you know, be right even with the Cubs either this year as far as
popularity.
Yeah.
I think that's because it's, you know, this is going to be what, your third or fourth like 90 loss season in a row, and that wears, if you don't have anything, like in the 90s when the Cubs were bad, they had Sammy Sosa to kind of cheer on. it seems like all you hear about are these prospects, and you're just waiting for these prospects to come up, and it's like, what are you gonna do during that time? You're gonna watch this team play? And
yeah, I think I said it before, is, you know, if you go to a Cubs game, what are they gonna do, hand you a copy of Baseball Prospectus? I mean,
yeah. And they don't lower their ticket prices.
Which, no, and it's, which
to me is the worst part about it.
And you know, as a guy who loves geeking out about this stuff, it is exciting to see, you know, the guys in all the different levels, from Daytona to Tennessee to Iowa, doing well. But the major league product is not good. And as much as I do like Rizzo, I like Castillo, you know, they're not putting a whole package together on the field. And granted, they are looking, you know, in the past week or so, they are playing pretty well. Finally won a series against St. Louis. But they, you know, they've been, is for all the losses they've had, they've been fairly competitive in most of the games. And,
yeah,
you know, they haven't been quitters, which is nice to see. Is even when they're losing, they're not quitting.
I think you're going to see Cubs fans start acting like the White Sox fans have acted in the last 10, 15 years, in that they don't show up until the team proves to them that they, you know, that they're a winner. I mean, you look at 05, it wasn't until August when people started showing up. And then as soon as people started showing up, they kind of went on a tailspin, ironically. But
I mean, and that's the way it should be. I mean, the thing with, you know, I know you knock the way the Cubs are proceeding, and in a perfect world is you would like to be able to blow everything up and just start fresh. And but the thing is the Cubs for the last several years have had that luxury where they still have, they're putting butts in the seats and no product in the field, and they've had that luxury, but it's starting to the point where they've worn out their welcome doing that.
The only biggest thing I knock is I believe you have to build both from within and from free agency. And they've made, besides signing Edwin Jackson, they've made absolutely no effort to get anyone. There were a lot of quality pitchers out there.
They threw $100 million contract offer out this offseason.
Yeah, but you know, that's sort of like they didn't get it. So I mean, you could say they threw it out there. A lot of times the White Sox threw a big contract out there. You know, it doesn't matter. They didn't get it. It's not about throwing a contract out. It's about you know, one player is not going to change your team. You have to get a lot of players. I mean, look at what the Yankees did in the offseason. And as much as I hate what they do, I mean, they did it because they needed to change and they needed to win now. I'm not saying the Cubs have to win now, but I mean, you get a guy, you know, a 28-year-old pitcher and sign him to a 4-year, 5-year contract. You know, you start building that pitching staff now. You start building, getting that savvy veteran that can stick around for 5 years. And I mean, they're out there. Make trades for them. You know, Mark Trumbo was on the trade market. Adam Eaton was on the trade market. I mean, Hector Santiago was on the trade market for the White Sox. I mean, they're out there, and you don't see anything like that from the Cubs. And you're even if these prospects make it to the bigs, they're still not going to be enough to win. You need to have a full staff, And you guys are living by the idea that, oh, eventually they'll spend money. Well, there's a lot of politics involved with the money that the Cubs are going to be able to spend. So how do you know that's true? So, I mean, they're really
I agree with you. It's you know, that's the hope, is that when these guys are on the cusp, you bring in free agents to bolster that. And, you know, you bring in two starting pitchers and then some draft picks to fill out that rotation. And you hope that, you know, Edwards comes back from, you know, whatever this injury/precaution is, you know, where you expect him to be a solid contributor.
He's still young, though, so I wouldn't be.
Oh, I'm not worried about it. But, you know, he's a guy that they're very high on, and you know, you bring him, and hopefully they start stocking some arms in the draft.
But that's still a dangerous move. It's still saying that you're 2-3 years away, you know?
Oh, I know. But I mean, the thing is you look at it is you can't, I mean, if you stock the whole team full of veteran free agents, you know, then when these guys try to move up, there's nowhere to go. And it's kind of they're a little bit stuck I think their thinking is they're willing to spend the money, but it has to be a player who will be here for when the prospects come up. And I think that's why they wanted Tanaka's, because
going back to what I was saying, there are players out there that they can do that with, you know, available. And
I agree, you know, and it's, you know, I think they're being a little too cautious with it is, you know, Tanaka, I think everyone viewed as fairly, you know, as far as free agents go, kind of a slam dunk. And so it was, even though you're offering him big money, you're not that worried about it. But some of these other guys, I think they're being way too cautious about spending money on players. And because if they bring in another free agent that sucks, then, you know, it's going to look much worse for the franchise. It's already struggling.
It only looks bad because they sign one free agent every 3 years. And if that free agent sucks, it looks horrible. If they were to go out, like I'll give example on the White Sox, they went out and signed Jeff Kepinger. Horrible contract. He's been god awful. He's injured right now. And by the way, the White Sox just scored in the 12th. But anyways, he, you know, just a bad, bad contract. Signed this utility player with 3-year, $12 million contract. And they don't even have a spot for him now when he comes off the DL. It's like, but the thing is, they go out and they sign Jose Abreu. They go out and they make a trade for Adam Eaton. They go out and make a trade for Matt Davidson, who, by the way, is a third baseman, just like Kepinger was supposed to be when they traded for him. So I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying is that in the Sox instance, they made that bad deal, but they made other deals that kind of didn't make it so apparent, and they could survive with that bad deal. And, you know, I'm not saying the Sox are the poster children for how to do that. I think the Yankees are, but, I think the Cubs, if the Cubs were more active, you don't have to spend a lot of money to be active.
I think it comes down to is being overly cautious and
cheap
or a combination
or the Ricketts not willing to spend money until they get some sort of financial guarantee that they're not going to be spending their own money.
I mean, if that team couldn't or if that the family couldn't afford to spend the money, they shouldn't have bought the team.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't use the word couldn't. I would change that to wouldn't. I don't think they want to use their own money. Oh, wow. Canerco just got beamed. But I think they don't want to spend their own money. There's a big difference. So, and it sucks for you guys. Like, I kind of miss, like, there's no rivalry between these two teams. There hasn't been in a while, but the one thing that's kind of the one remaining part of the rivalry that's kind of dwindled in the last couple of years was, you know, it's hard to, like, say which team is better. It's hard to, since 2008, both teams have not done well. And it's hard to say, oh, my team is better than yours when they both suck.
It's true. And you know, I remember when it was, you know, the crosstown rival game and people were all amped up and, you know, social media was abuzz with, you know, both sides throwing barbs. Nobody really cares.
No, I mean, that's why they shortened it. They didn't care anymore. By the way, you know how old Paul Konerko is? They are pinch running a pitcher for him. Which I probably agree with doing. I don't disagree with that move.
He's got some bum wheels.
Well, he always had, but I think it's even worse now. But it's just hard to like get excited about this, because if both teams were good, like 2008, the best thing about 2008 was that both teams made the playoffs, and I actually had thoughts of, you know, that almighty Chicago World Series where this town would just go crazy, you know. And that was fun to think about. I wouldn't be here, of course, but it was fun to think about an all Chicago World Series. And it's, you know, it's kind of, both teams are so far away now. It's like, it's hard to like be excited about this competition or whatever you call it. So
I mean, I guess that kind of wraps up baseball talk. There's the, you know, before you came on, I was talking a little bit of, you know, NFL draft starts Thursday.
And yeah, you're excited, aren't you?
I'm very excited. I went through my mock, and I have Bears with Calvin Pryor round one.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that because what's his name is, do you think, is going to be off the board? The one everyone.
Aaron Donald.
Aaron Donald's, and
yeah.
Also.
So I've been using I've been using, you know, these mock sites that like they pick, they have artificial intelligence, and they, you know, have their own big board, and, you know, fill in team needs, and then they have a computer choose for the other teams. So you have, you know, a bit of actual realism in it. So when I was picking in this mock, Aaron Donald went 12th, so they were off the board. So I went Calvin Pryor round one.
That means he goes to Detroit, right?
No, the Giants.
Oh, the Giants. I thought Detroit was 12. Were they 11?
Maybe. I just remember they went to the Giants. I thought the Giants were 12, but maybe I'm wrong. But they went with the Giants, and then I have them drafting Dominique Easley, the defensive tackle out of Florida in round two, who I love. I think he's fantastic. Round three, Deion Buchanan, another safety from Washington State, who was just a bargain pick in the third round because I have him as a second round grade. So when he falls in the third, I take him. Nevin Lawson, the cornerback out of Utah State in the fourth round.
Wow. Three defensive backs in the.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean,
you know, we need a corner, and this Deion Buchanan was a guy that he was too good of a pick to give up in the third round. Then I have Andre Williams, the running back from Boston College, in the fifth. Kevin Norwood, the wide receiver from Alabama, in the sixth. And then Kevin Pierre-Louis, the outside linebacker from Boston College, in the sixth.
You really think they're going to draft a wide receiver, considering that they just signed like three in the offseason?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, who knows? Josh Morgan may not be with the team much longer, but.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that they will. I think it's a, you know, it's, there are some good guys in there, and they need somebody else that can, you know, fill a role, because they have Marquise Wilson, who's still a question mark, who's going, you know, at this point stepping up to be the number three receiver. So.
Love the size. We'll see if it translates.
Yeah. So, you know, I did my mock, and I'm ready for the draft coming up on Thursday. And I guess the last thing to talk about is, you know, not much to talk about, but Bulls, and, you know, the rumors floating around. We have, looks like, you know, the Knicks might have a new coach.
Yeah, Steve Kerr.
And I mean, the rumor mills are saying he's going to go there. How does that?
That helps the Bulls, I would presume. Because
I would assume so too.
Wants to play for a guy that has no coaching experience.
Yeah, and I believe if the rumors are true, is that Phil Jackson sat down with Carmelo and told him that they weren't going to give him a max contract, that they expected him to take a little bit of less money in order to
help the team.
Help the team. And so if he's not going to be able to get that max contract, then that's, you know, one of the main benefits of him going, staying in New York is out the window.
There is one caveat in that Reinsdorf really, it seems like from what I've been hearing, is Reinsdorf doesn't want to use the amnesty clause on Boozer. He's going to try to trade him. So you could see potential sign and trade with Melo. And that would mean the Bulls are going to be paying Melo more money than I would like them to. But at this point, oh well.
I mean, they need a scoring.
Yeah, it is what it is. Like, just can't rely on Rose or anyone. Like we talked about last week when I was quasi down. By the way, the Wizards just manhandled Indiana today.
They did.
Kind of like makes me feel bad that the Bulls couldn't get there, but then it also, you know, confirms that the Wizards, who we think they are, they're a tough team.
And it's, you know, and it wasn't surprising to me, is because the Pacers are a very similar team to the Bulls.
Yeah, can't
and
shoot.
I figured that they would play the same game that they did against the Bulls. They would do against the Pacers and probably have very similar results.
Yeah, did you see Roy Hibbert's stats?
I didn't.
His stat line? He was like 0 for 1 shooting with 1 assist and no rebounds.
How? I mean, just being there, you should be able to get more than 1 rebound.
Yeah, if you're 7'2" and you're an all-star, you should be getting more than... No, he had no rebound.
If you're 7'2" and awful, you should still get more than 1 rebound. No, just on accident.
He had 0 rebounds, is what I'm trying to say. He didn't get a single one.
Yeah, I mean, you should be able to just, like, close your eyes and put your hands up and get a rebound.
He is really putting Indiana in a tough spot because they were relying heavy on him. And if he continues this downward spiral into next season, you know, the Central's up for grabs. There's no way Indiana's going to stay atop. And they're going to be in a lot of trouble, particularly if they lose Lance Stephenson, which they probably will. Yeah, that division is looking worse and worse. Might be worse than this year.
Yeah, and it's hard to imagine, but it's, you know, true. And Indiana will be in some serious trouble, and, you know, hopefully that goes to the Bulls' advantage.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of ifs. You know, they need Rose healthy. They need to go get a score. They need to change things up. And one thing I've been saying, besides either amnesting or trading Boozer, is I really think you have to trade Taj. The main reason is his salary is pretty steep too. And if you can get that off the books, as much as everyone loves Taj and he's a great player, but you know what you have with him. And I think he played above expectations, at least in the second half of this season. So, I mean, you sell high. And it's one of those things where, like, if the Bulls need to change their identity without rebuilding, and by getting rid of both their power forwards and bringing new power forwards in, that definitely does it. Hopefully they bring Mirotic in, or even Anthony played a power forward at times, and then sign a veteran. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for. I told you about my dream lineup next year, which I don't think is going to happen. Did I?
I don't believe you did.
Okay. So my dream lineup would be Rose, Butler, and Anthony, Paul Gasol, and Noah, with Snell, Mirotic, a veteran point guard and their draft picks coming off the bench.
Yeah, that's a real pipe dream. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I know, but you could dream, right? Mainly because I think Gasol, two reasons. I think Gasol wants to go to Memphis to play with his brother, and I don't think he'll pull a Ray Allen and take less money to go to the Bulls. So, but yeah, it'd be nice. But I think you got to trade Gibson. If you really are intent on getting Anthony, you have to trade Gibson. There's just not enough salary room otherwise to do that, because you are going to be paying 60% of your set team salary to two players. So, but we'll see what happens. I'm actually still excited about basketball. The Clippers just totally dominated Oklahoma City today.
Which is not surprising. I mean, is the Clippers have a really, really good team. And yeah, after watching them in the first round, is Oklahoma City just they came out flat a lot.
That whole first round of the playoffs was so exciting. And if there's anything that makes me really depressed about how the Bulls laid an egg in the playoffs was the fact that every other series besides the Bulls, Wizards, and Bobcats, Heat were great series. I mean, that Portland-Houston series was ridiculous, and how it ended was even more ridiculous. And, I mean, it's too bad, like, the Bulls couldn't have had an exciting series. I mean, if you remember last year, the Bulls series was the only exciting series in the first round of the playoffs. This year, it's like it was completely different. And what you saw in the end was the teams that you thought should have won, but barely. And now you're going to see the matchups in the West are great. Like that Portland San Antonio series is going to be fun to watch. This Clippers Thunder series is going to be fun to watch. And, you know, it's too bad the East sucks so bad because, yeah, it's actually, I take that back. The Brooklyn Heat series, if there's any team that can beat the Heat, it's probably Brooklyn. So that should be a decent series to watch. But so there's still some good basketball. You know?
I mean, you know, if you think the basketball playoffs are good, which granted they have been, is the hockey playoffs have been phenomenal.
Yeah. They've
just like these two playoffs, you know, between the two sports, it's just been out of the park. And you know, it's good for the games. It's bad for my free time because everything's so intriguing that I just want to watch everything. And you know, I've been watching way more non-Chicago teams than I usually do at this time of year.
Yeah. I mean, if you're that sport, a fan of that sport, you'd be silly not to. One of my former bosses, a huge Blackhawks fan, always knocks the NBA. Just puts it down all the time. And when five out of the eight first round series go to a game seven, and quite frankly, six of them should have, if Lillard doesn't have that last second shot, you know, that would have gone to a game seven.
And funny about that, that last shot to win the series, is somebody posted this morning a photoshopped version of the Houston Rockets Wikipedia page. And then on like the right hand side, it says like, you know, when they were founded, who the owner of the team was. It says owner Damian Lillard.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And that was, everyone talks about Durant's 4-point play, but like when you think about that, they're down by two with 0.9 seconds left, and he just does a catch and shoot. I mean, it was pretty amazing. So, I mean, it's fun. The for you as a Blackhawks fan, they're probably the Blackhawks are kind of taking care of business now, so it's like it's not as intense. They're just, you know, they kind of lost the first two. in the first round, and then just like took care, you know, won the next and four. And
now they're six in a row.
So it's not as I would presume it's not as at least your nerves aren't, you know, up there, but at the same time, you know, it's definitely not as. I don't want to say exciting because I watched most of the first game against the Wild and all the second, and they just clearly dominated.
But it made up for it because the Blues series, there was, you know, three, four, five, six overtime periods in six games. You know, four of the games went overtime, one to triple overtime. So my heart needed some time to recover.
Yeah, but as a casual Blackhawks fan, they look like they needed those first couple of games against the Blues, and they seem to be rolling now. And I don't see a team, you know. We'll see what happens next round, but they look pretty good now. From what I followed, whenever Taze and Kane are not the people that fans are talking about of. Just being great, and I'm referring to Hossa has kind of been the name I've been hearing has just been playing ridiculous, and Crawford as well. It's like, well, if the two best players are playing well, but they're not getting as much attention, it seems like as these other guys, they must be doing pretty well.
That wraps it up for this week. Earlier in the show, and I'll tell you, is updated and made a site for the show today. So it's talkingsportschicago.blogspot.com, and have a new Twitter account. It's twitter.com/ Swirsky Sports. And so everyone should check that out. And I want to thank Gary for coming on the show and talking with us.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me.
And, thanks everyone for listening. And check us out next week when we have the NFL Draft Spectacular. Hopefully we are speaking to Gary again next week.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Try not to.
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears, 31. -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bare.